But welcome again. So let's get started. My name is Arturo Toledo. I am a senior UX designer in the Windows Phone design team. Here with me, we also have Karina Black. It's over there. Also a UX lead in the Windows Phone design studio. Some of you know me from some of my previous roles in the company, like doing some Silverlight and Expression product management. Now I'm lucky and honored to be part of the UX team for Phone. It's a great team, and today I want to talk to you about three big blocks of information. First, I'm going to give you an update on where we're at in terms of Microsoft Design, the Microsoft Design offering for you, for developers and designers, to create experiences for consumers around the world. Then we're going to talk about Windows Phone, and we're going to go a little deeper into Metro. We're going to learn where it comes from, where did we get our inspiration in Microsoft to create Metro, and hopefully this will inspire you to take Metro, use it to design Windows Phone applications, or even push the envelope beyond what comes out of the box and create your own experiences. And finally, I'm also going to give you some ideas on how to design your own Kinect gestures, Air gestures, and then how to test them. So it's three different blocks of content, a lot of content, but hopefully it will be fun for everyone. And I want to start by saying that this year has been a very exciting year for Microsoft as a whole, across the company, our different groups. We've been announcing and releasing different technologies that I think are really exciting in terms of user experience. It's a unified consumer vision that we have. Not too long ago, just a couple months ago, Steven Sinofsky, during the Build event in California, showed the vision for Windows 8 and all these cool things that you will be able to create. And it's been really amazing to see how the Windows team has reinvented Windows from scratch and is going to allow all of us to create experiences for different devices in different screen sizes. Phone, we had the Mango release not too long ago. It's currently being deployed worldwide. Mango is already a very mature release. It's been already praised by the press, by analysts, by consumers, by developers, as being a really solid operating system for the phone that you guys can target to create great experiences. And we're going to talk more about that a little later. We have more than 30,000 applications in the marketplace and growing, and we're working hard to make this marketplace a great venue where you guys can produce your applications, ship them, and also make some money. And Xbox as well, who has had an amazing year with the help of Kinect, which we're going to talk about a little later, the Kinect effect, just taking over the world, seeing researchers and academics, developers, designers, even artists all around the world using and creating great experiences with Kinect. So talking about Windows, from our friends in the Windows team, a couple months ago, Windows 8 was shown and for the first time, and there is a preview available that you can download at buildwindows.com. If you want to learn more about Windows 8, go to this website, and they have an amazing resource of all the videos, all the presentations that were part of the Build event. Could you raise your hand if by any chance you had the opportunity to attend Build? One lucky person here. I'm really jealous because I kept following the event. Not in person. Oh, in spirit. Okay, that's good. Oh, got it. Well, it was an amazing event, so truly recommend you guys going there. And this is the right time to get started learning Windows 8. When we release, you will already be there if you start preparing yourselves, and definitely worth doing it. In terms of Xbox and Kinect, as we mentioned just a couple days ago, there were different announcements around Kinect. Momentum couldn't be bigger around Kinect, and I recommend you go to the Xbox.com website. Just 2 days ago, we released a new page, a new section in the site called the Kinect Effect, which is devoted to all these exploratory experiences and applications that are being created around the world. So I really highly recommend you guys go and check it out. And this is a Mango, though it doesn't look like one because the colors are a little weird. But it's a Mango. And so let's talk about Windows Phone now and talk a little bit about how we see the vision for you guys to create experiences. One of the fundamental concepts that Microsoft designers think of when creating these experiences for consumers could be summarized in one single point. We do not longer see applications. We do not longer see the applications that we'll build as isolated entities on their own. So we don't just believe that we can create an application here and think of the website as a separate thing. Instead, we're thinking as a unified experience across multi-screens and multi-platforms. Here, for example, in the phone team, we're doing a lot of work to expose our range of different services, like, of course, the browser and maps, but even other things like the contacts list or the music and video hub. And we're exposing those services so that your applications can hook up to those hubs, to those services, making your application go beyond being your application itself and truly becoming a single experience along with the phone. And that really is just a vision across Microsoft. We no longer think that we should create applications as, again, isolated entities of their own, but instead we need to think of this multi-screen experience. Think of this experience that will start on a small screen, perhaps on the phone, go to a tablet, go to a desktop, go to the TV, go to a website. For example, instead of thinking that we have to create an application to help us go sail, maybe get a boat and go sailing, let's think of the sailing experience for the user as a whole. That's the way we're thinking about it. And so, for instance, if we have this application in Windows Phone, we can see how this one is already integrating or aggregating. It's a mashup of different information. We have the weather conditions, right? We have routes, which is a maps and GPS-related service. We have destinations, which could be coming from a popular sailing magazine, for instance. And we have alerts, which could be coming from like the National Coast Guard alert system or something like that. Now, the interesting thing about this information is that all this information lives in the cloud, right? So it really is a matter of us as designers and developers to take that information from the cloud that exists up there and tailor the experience depending on the different screens that we're targeting. But we began this process by thinking about the sailing experience as a whole, not just as an isolated application for the phone or an isolated application for Windows. It's all an integrated understanding. Here's another example, the running experience, right? So Corinne and I like to run, and she challenges me pretty often lately. She always beats me. But the running experience is the same thing. Let's not just create one isolated app for the phone to help you to go along with you when running. Instead, let's think broadly about the running experience. And so in this application, Nike Plus, for instance, in Windows Phone, you can see how we also have a workout section with recommended workouts. We have our routes, which again, maps and GPS services. We have our bodies, which is basically a contacts list. And we have challenges. People are challenging us to run X number of miles at some point. Now, this concept of thinking outside of the box and thinking beyond just one small little application, let me give you an example. Here, for example, we have two different applications. I'm going to quote that. And I'm going to say, so we know that we have a friend named Anne, and Anne lives in Las Vegas. And we know that because we have her in our contacts list as a user, right? Now, we have another application, which is the weather application, and we know it's 75 degrees in Las Vegas and it's clear. So it looks like a good day for running. So up there we can see a tile that exposes the user, our friend Anne, and the weather, which is 75 degrees. So we now know that Anne is in a place where there is nice weather. Now let's do that with a couple more applications. Here we have Anne, again, in our contacts list, so we know she's our friend, we know some things about her. And in the application, in the workouts, we know that Anne is planning to run today. And so in the tile up there, we see our friend Anne that is announcing she's planning to run. But what happens if we take this and we merge now three different applications? So now we can know we have really good weather. We know that our friend Anne is considering going running. So the tile up there now says, challenge Anne for a run. And that's because we were able to understand information that came from three different applications. So again, when you start thinking broader about the creation of experiences beyond just one application and start really integrating with other applications or services, you immediately gain more intelligence and you are able to provide more intelligence to consumers and to your users to achieve more things. Another example here is the phone experience. And I heard this particular story from Bill Buxton a few months ago. He asked us, hey, what is the phone today? Let's ask ourselves what really is the phone as of today. And the way he talks about it is he says, okay, so I'm walking on the street with my phone, right, in my ear, and the phone is this device, right, for me in that particular case. But I get into my car, and maybe the car has something like Microsoft Sync, so I put and dock my phone into the car, and so the phone functionality almost like metaphysically transfers to the car, and the car is now my phone. The speakers of the car allow me to hear the person I'm talking to. The integrated microphone allows me to give to talk to people or to give voice commands to the phone. And so the phone is now my car. I step out of my car, I continue walking, and my phone, the phone functionality gets transferred back to this device that we know as a phone. We get to our computer, we dock our phone to the desktop, and our desktop, and maybe some headphones become our phone. So what really is the phone? And so the thing here is, again, to think in terms of the phone experience, because it's no longer, functionality is no longer achieved by a simple little object. It's a connection of experiences that create an overall larger experience. Now, the interesting thing about experiences is that people, you know, we all continue to grow our expectations around technology very quickly. We are all part of the tech industry, which you know, is fast and furious, and people keep changing their expectations all the time. So let's now talk about Windows Phone and talk about Metro. Gonna be more specific here, and we're gonna talk about the influence and inspiration. Where does Metro come from? Who has heard about Metro before? Yeah, a good number of people. For those of you who have not heard about Metro, Metro is our design language. It is a design language that we use to create experiences for Windows Phone, and we're gonna talk more about it. Now, this, what that we have on the screen, is the direction that we were going to, that Microsoft was going to, with Windows Mobile 7. This was a couple years ago. As we know, Microsoft had been in the smartphone business for a few years, and a couple years ago, the expectations around what a smartphone should be were changing dramatically, right? Consumers wanted more. There was more technology available to create a phone. And so Microsoft said, let's rethink this from scratch, and let's reimagine what the right phone should be like. And as you can see, it looks very different from what Windows Phone looks today, but this was the direction we were taking. Back then, as part of this rethinking process, Albert Schum was hired and was brought into the company. Albert comes from Nike. He was a designer there for many years. And he also has a couple business degrees, which basically means that he's a great designer that can create designs that can be sold and exported globally. He can create designs that can be exported and can talk to a broad set of audiences. He's our director. He's the director of the phone design studio. And along with other designers in the company, we had many designers who were already working in the company, like Bill Flora or Jeff Fong, Jay Park. Some of these guys, amazing designers, were already working in some other products in Microsoft that we now identify as the origins of Metro. This Windows Media Center, I'm sure you guys have seen it, super clean background, typography was starting to rule the game here and to become the component for composition, very clean approach to user interface in general. In this screen, there is one very particular detail that is very Metro, which is using the cover for the albums of the artists, right? We're just presenting them in a very clean way. No drop shadows, no borders, no ornaments. Very, very clean approach. We can see a little bit more of that here in the Soon client that was designed entirely using a grid for composition. It looks super well balanced. Also great use of typography to convey hierarchy and structured information, as well as great use of images in a very clean manner. Also a couple years ago, the Soon HD device allowed us to start exploring for the first time some of these concepts in a small screen and start integrating things like motion and transitions into a smaller screen and see how that would work and enhance the experience. So Albert, along with some of these designers and many other designers that we have in the studio, these are just a few of them, we have many more, they were tasked to reinvent the phone, Windows Phone, from scratch. Now, the challenge of designing a smartphone today is that the phone today, as we saw in the videos, in the evolution of the expectation of the phone, it represents the convergence of a huge number of technologies, maps, GPS. Your phone is your photo camera, your video camera, it's like everything, right? So how do you put all these technologies and how do you wrap them into something that can then be accessed by developers and designers to create experiences? So the way Microsoft approached this need was by creating this thing we call Metro. Now, Metro is made out of two things. It's made out of design principles, and then it's made out of design language, a design language that sits on top of those principles. So right now what I want to do is I want to tell you more about those principles, where they come from, and I think once you get a better understanding of the principles, you will definitely be able, I have no doubt, to create and design experiences that are metro-based, because the principles are those big pillars that will give us that foundation. The design language sits on top of the principles. The design language, the way I describe it, is it's the building blocks, right? It's the building blocks that you will use to design your experience. It's the user interface controls, like buttons and sliders and checkboxes, but it's also the hardware of the phone, the back button, the start screen, the search button. It's a camera, the gyroscope. It's motion, it's typography, it's grid. It's all these building blocks that you use and you learn to merge and blend together to create experiences. But let's start talking about the principles. So this is a little bit of the way that Windows Phone looks like. And as you can see, it's very different from the direction we were initially going to take with Windows Mobile. Very clean use of typography to convey hierarchy and structured information. Very clean images, no borders, no drop shadows or anything like that. And one of the typical questions we get is, so where did you guys get inspiration? Where did Microsoft get inspiration to create Metro? And we usually say, well, we got inspiration out of transportation graphics and urban signage on, you know, big cities. But the question is, where do those graphics come from? And they come from a design style called the International Typographic Style. It's also known as the Swiss style. This style has its origins actually in the early 20th century in a design and architecture school called the Bauhaus. Now, the Bauhaus talked about a lot of things, but the one key and fundamental concept that the Bauhaus defended was fierce reduction of elements. And the thing is that for centuries, we, all humans, right, we've been building or constructing buildings with a lot of ornaments, right? I always say that our columns would have flowers or little angels carrying the ceilings and all these adorners in buildings, right? That had always been kind of the trend. But in the early 20th century, a more functional and rational approach to creating, perhaps also driven by social, economical, and political needs, drove people to start stripping out of all those ornaments and those adorners. So fierce reduction of elements, using only what is truly needed. In the 1950s, after the Second World War, the world went again through a huge change where more people from Asia were traveling into Europe and Europe into America and America into Europe, and cities started welcoming people from all sorts of different cultures. So governments had the need to talk to all these people in a global and neutral manner, right? People were trying just to get more information. Cities were growing. More information was being provided to them. They needed to take decisions and make decisions faster. And this design style expressed mostly on print media, things like posters or billboards, books, magazines, etc., etc. Here's a mood board of some of the exploration that was done to understand more about these graphics. And again, the thing about this type of style, this design style, is that it's global. So you can find this type of style in a place like Tokyo or in a place like New York, in a place like Brussels. Everything here, of course, is, I could say it's totally in this style when it comes to transportation graphics. It's a worldwide universal design language that people use to communicate. Notice that the typography, like the A there on the center, it doesn't have any adorners. It's what we call a sans-serif font with no adorners, and it's just what it's needed. Here are a couple more examples. In New York, Massimo Vignelli is probably one of the most recognized designers that have pushed for this style. He lives in the United States, at least in the United States. This style came from Europe, but he brought it into the U.S. and has already also pushed it, pretty broadly in the last many years now. The use of a grid is super important in this design style. It helps you have balance and alignment to all your different elements. This is the Munich 1972 Olympics branding, also following the same style. And the Olympics is probably the ideal type of event where you need to talk to a range of people from different backgrounds in a very neutral way, right? So this is a great way. I always point out that the dog, for example, the dog is an organic type of creature, right? So, but here, notice how it's been abstracted into very clean composition lines, horizontal, vertical, and big flat pieces of color. Here's some of the iconography. In terms of iconography, this style does not use anything like 3D or textures or anything like that. It's just an abstraction, very minimalistic approach to conveying a concept like a taxi cab or a train or a restaurant, et cetera, and Helvetica. So I'm sure a lot of people here have heard about Helvetica or have even used it. So when it comes to typography, Helvetica has been the star of the show as part of this style. It is not the only typography that can be considered part of this style. And in fact, in Microsoft, we use Sego. Sego is a font, the typography that we give you, so that you can use it to create Windows Phone and design Windows Phone applications. It is a sans-serif font, so no adorners. But Helvetica is a very particular font, very popular around the world, that is used pretty broadly. And in fact, it is so adored by a lot of people that someone thought it was a good idea to create a movie based on Helvetica. The thing about this movie, I've seen it 4 times. It is not just like a documentary you see once. It's actually reference material because it's got interviews with some of the most prominent designers that are still acting as of today, talking about this. It really becomes a good reference material. And here you can see clearly the passion about the concepts we've been talking about, right? Fierce reduction of elements, using only what's needed and being very clear about that. Information is front and center. So that's what the international typographic style or Swiss style is all about. The thing about this style, this design style, and the reason why we in Microsoft believe strongly in this style to use in our different platforms is that it has no expiration date. Because it is based on global and universal values that don't change. It is timeless, and we believe it will always feel modern. And with your help, you will be able to continue pushing it even further. In fact, there are a lot of global brands that, as of today, they continue to use this typographic style. Even though this has been around for 50 years, this is a poster from a movie, Little Miss Sunshine. I don't know if you guys have seen it, right? If you have seen it, then you will totally notice that photo down there represents and is all you need to understand what the movie is all about. It's a family running and chasing each other in a road trip. Notice also the use of white space here. That's another concept that's very valuable in this type of design style. If you're given a certain area to put in your design, you don't necessarily have to fill it up with things. We can only have what's needed. And the white space, the empty space, actually helps you create better compositions, and it just enhances the action that is occurring on the bottom right here. This is another ad from American Apparel, an American company, and I can see some people are kind of standing up. They want to go already to the store. But this is not Hoboken here. It's not walking distance. It's actually in New York. Someone was telling me there is a city very close by. But again, super clean, like design, just the photograph of the model, a lot of empty space, and very simple. The Crate and Barrel brand as well, notice how the letters are wrapping around the box, and so they cut off, but they're enough to convey to us the branding, right? And that is something we actually do a lot in Windows Phone. We trim some of the text, And then that actually hints the user that there is something more to discover or to go through. LeBron James, super popular basketball player in the US. We do not need a basketball somewhere there. We don't even need a photograph of LeBron in the pamphlet. The name is all that matters, right? So in that concept of showing only what's needed, that's the only thing that's needed in this particular ad. And in the case of the North Face advertisement there, the thing I like to call out here is that notice how the North Face logo on the bottom right is really tiny, right? We know it's the North Face because it's a popular brand. But a typical request from clients is, make my logo bigger, right? Make it bigger than my product so that people can recognize me. But once you start developing a brand, having a big logo is actually not the best, right? In this case, the photograph tells the whole story. It tells a story about how North Face understands people who like to do winter sports and provide them with the best products for that purpose. So with all these influence and the international typographic style evolving in the last 50 years, the Microsoft team, the Windows Phone Design Studio team, they said, okay, so we have all these principles and all these great things. How do we then take all those principles into a digital medium like the phone in a smaller screen that's made out of pixels, right? Because so far, a lot of these expressions have been created or manifested using printed medium. So that was an interesting thing here. And the thing that we realized, of course, changed is that information was now digital information. The other principles could totally be the same, but we now were dealing with digital information. And that is the big change that is occurring as of that we had to go through when designing this. Now, the thing about digital information is that it is connected, it's personal, and it's relevant by definition. So it is connected because now information can hook you up with other people, other contacts that you know, or even other software that understands some of your needs. It is personal because information is no longer provided. It's no longer the same information provided to everyone. It's tailored to your personal needs. And it's also relevant because it's not provided at any random time. It's provided to you at the time that you need it. Compare that to a poster, right? When you print a poster, it's static and the information is flat and it's there forever. If you put it on the street, you will be providing that information to everyone independently of whether they need the information or not. So, of course, the great thing about digital information is it has these three values. And we've been using these three values as a way for us to create the Windows Phone experience. So these are the principles for Metro. After describing all the context and all the background, these are the principles for Metro. Content, not Chrome, so information is the most important thing. Fierce reduction of elements, only what's needed. Typography as a way to compose user interfaces. Global, Metro is something that should be able to talk to a broad set of people from different cultures. And motion, because now in this digital medium, of course, we can now have motion, right? Posters, books, they're static, right? But in a digital medium, you can have things move. And authentically digital. And authentically digital is basically about being honest with the type of medium that we are targeting. And let me give an example. This is a concept that we refer to being iconographic versus infographic. We think that Windows Phone is infographic. The phone is there to present information to the user and not necessarily to recreate a physical world into a little screen. So this is Metro. These were the design principles. If we understand these design principles, then we can build a design language on top of that. And so Microsoft, after understanding the principles, we set out to create a collection of components and building blocks so that you guys could use to design Windows Phone experiences. That's what we call the design language. I am not going to get too deep into the design language in this session, but you will hear more about that in the design session that comes, I believe, after the keynote. But just to give you an idea, on the left side of your screen, we have the principles, which we just discussed. And on the right, we have some of these big buckets or categories that make up the design language in Metro. So everything that you use basically in Visual Studio or on the phone, or on Expression Blend to design your user interfaces is part of this. So navigation and layout, composition, typography, motion. We have different motion styles, and we'll talk more about that in the next session. The use of iconography, the use of user interface controls like list boxes and sliders, all those things are the components that become part of the design language for Metro. Let me just give you a couple examples of that. Navigation, layout, and composition. We use something called a hub and spoke model for navigating within a Windows Phone experience. What this means is that we're on the start screen. The user selects an option and is taken to another level, to another screen, selects another option, and we're taken to the next level, et cetera, et cetera. This creates a very linear path for the user. And again, we believe that this is the best way to help the user navigate along an application. We do not really believe in more complex tree structure branch kind of systems. We believe in this linear manner. And it's actually so important for Windows Phone that we decided to include a back button in the hardware of phones, because that enables the user to navigate forward, taking decisions, and navigate backward following the same path that they took them to where they wanted to go initially. Another interesting concept of the design language, of Metro design language, is that the canvas extends beyond the boundaries of the screen. And I don't know if you guys have a Windows Phone or you've tried a Windows Phone. I still remember the first time I did play with a Windows Phone, I had this feeling that I was dealing with information that extended beyond the screen. Because of the different controls that we have, like pivot and panorama in particular, that give you that feeling that the screen is larger than just this little screen. That's another concept that we use a lot in Windows Phone. The grid is also something very important. Just the way we described, it's very important for the international typographic style, and it's very important for us in Windows Phone design. We have a very particular grid that is very flexible. It has 24 pixels, 25 pixels, 1225, 1225, et cetera, et cetera. And with this grid, you can start identifying like different cells that you can use, columns. So perhaps this starts giving you an idea of how you would lay out East Asian characters for an application made for Japan, for China. These are rows, right? So these where we could start fitting. So our characters would have that height. And if we needed a two-column format, 3, 4, 5. It's super flexible, very flexible grid. Here you can see some actual examples. The start screen of the phone, the size of the tiles is not just random. It actually matches perfectly with the grid. Here's another example. The smaller tiles that take you into the application, they now use 4 cells. Here's another example as well. Here it's very clear on the word albums on top how we're using 2 rows. And so by using this grid, developers and designers, you can easily start laying out your user interfaces and ensure that everything will be aligned and well balanced. These are some of the controls. Again, we'll cover these more in the next session, but we have a huge number of controls. The important thing here is to consider that there are not only user interface controls on the screen, but also the hardware, which becomes part of those building blocks that you will be using. Okay, so let's make a pause here, and let's now talk about Kinect. And so again, I invite you guys to go visit the new Kinect Effect section in the Xbox.com website. They have more resources there that can get you started. And today I have the following information is brought to you by Ali Vasai. He's a friend of mine in the Xbox team. He's a senior interaction designer. He was one of the original designers that helped start understanding Kinect and start understanding the different interaction possibilities of Kinect. He's also known as Alpha Cog. We wanted to make sure that if you guys are in Xbox, you look for him. That's his alias. And when he talks about designing experiences for Kinect, he describes 2 big blocks or 2 big steps: conceptualizing your gestures or designing your gestures and testing them. So let's talk a little bit about this. The first concept that Ali usually talks about is game mindset. So when we play a game, with Kinect. And the thing is, we usually identify Kinect with games because that's the way it was initially brought to the world, right? So you think of Kinect as a place where, as a device that will help you have fun, right? And the thing here is that when you play games, the concept of something being challenging, that means it's fun. So if you're playing baseball and someone throws the ball at you and you miss it, then you go like, oh, I have to get better at this, right? Next time I'll be better. And so you try again and you try again until you start mastering the game, you start beating the opponent. But when you think of user interfaces, of user interface and application design, the concept of challenging is totally the opposite of fun. So if I am trying to scroll a list box and I do a gesture and the list box doesn't move, I'm not going to be like, oh, I can do better. I'm going to master this list box. I'm going to become the king. So what you're going to do is you're going to drop the application. You're going to get frustrated, and you're not going to come back to it, right? So for all of us, if we want to use Kinect to target those type of scenarios, application use and user interface scenarios, then the mindset needs to be completely different. Some of the principles to design gestures that Ali has shared with us in the last few months are some of these. Let me show you a few of them. One of them is that the user interface, the visual on the screen, should react in reflection to what the user is doing. So for example here, if I do something like this, right, you can see, well, we have that effect that is shown with an animation on the screen. But now let's take a look at this other example. I will do the same gesture. And it didn't feel the same, right? This kind of fade in and fade out didn't feel like it was connected to me. So that's one thing that you guys have to consider when designing something like this. The other concept is that gestures family up. So when you create an experience for Kinect, think that users will naturally expect that some same gestures will work for different purposes. So for example here, I could, if I swipe to the left, then I will expect that I could swipe to the right with my same hand, not with using any other gesture. I could swipe up by using my same hand and swipe down. So people will tend to think naturally about all these different things, and the more that you can start aggregating gestures in families, it will become easier for you to then create experiences that are more enjoyable for them and easier to learn. This is another concept, so repeating gesture, right? That's something we have to consider. Now, the challenging thing about this type of gesture is that not only you're going to get tired, right, eventually, but the real thing that happens sometimes is that Kinect and the system, not really Kinect, but the software, every time that I take my hand back to the next time, it thinks so I can the other side. And so you get this type of effect. So this is something that's related to identifying the real intent or identifying intent in the user. And it's something that Ali mentions all the time. When you create Kinect experiences, one of the challenges is to truly identify what the user is really trying to achieve. Here's another concept here. It's better to avoid handed gestures where only one hand can do something. So for example, here if I do this type of gesture, I should also be able to then do something like this with my left hand. People will expect that both their arms, you know, will work for this particular gesture. The other one here is that one-handed gestures are preferred for certain concepts. So here, for example, I could do something like this. But if I want to use two hands, the effect on the screen has to truly represent that. So I could do something like this, right? Talking about two hands as well, the other recommendation is that we ask people, if we decide to ask them to use two hands, for the motion of that gesture to be symmetrical. So we don't want people to do something like this, which I can't do, of course. Because that's the type of thing that we've seen some experiences tend to do, right? They force people to do weird things that are just very hard to do. And so here, you would do symmetrical to do some of this scaling, and all these type of things would make it much easier for the user to understand. This is another example of two-handed gestures that could be challenging. So in this experience, for instance, I'm being asked to touch the dot on the top, and so I touch it. And I'm being asked to touch the dot on the bottom, and so I touch it, but now I lost the other one, right? And maybe the application was requiring me to touch both at the same time. So another concept that we have to consider when designing Kinect applications. Think of the range of motion that people have. Gesture payoff. So this is another that I found also very interesting. Interactions that require more work should reflect on the screen as something that took more work to do. So for example, if I do a little gesture like this, right? A quick swipe, that's all I get on the screen. But if I do a gesture like this, you know, you get much more response from the screen, and you can immediately tell how that connects much better to the user. Fatigue kills gesture. That's similar to the one we were looking at before, right? So you're going to make your users really strong, but they're going to get very tired very quickly. So when you get to these type of scenarios, ask yourselves if there is another way to achieve this. Maybe we could have done something like this and have that rotate, and then when I reach out my hand, it stops. So different ways of approaching the design of a gesture. The other thing here, when it comes to Kinect, is that some people will be standing up, some other people will be sitting down, other people will be even laying down on the floor. And so you have to design experiences and gestures that accommodate to all these different ranges and possibilities. It's another variable to consider when designing these types of things. So we just reviewed a few general practical tips on how to design gestures. Let's now take a quick look at testing. So user testing is fundamental for Kinect. And Ali and other people in the Xbox group highly recommend that you guys create an actual prototype to test with users to obtain all this type of information. Are users being able to learn or almost naturally identify the type of gestures they can do? How much time is it taking for them to achieve a particular task? All those things become benchmarks for you to realize if this is being successful or not. So let me play you a couple videos of some user testing that the Xbox team did a couple years ago. In this first video, you will see that we're asking a little girl to shoot a pistol. So she's shooting a pistol, a rifle here actually. And here she's shooting a pistol. And this is a boy shooting a pistol, shooting a rifle. And as you can see, he's probably been playing too much Halo. He even moves his hands like some kickback there and everything. So the interesting thing about this, what the Xbox team learned about these type of scenarios, is that the actions that we consider natural are not the same for everyone. So Microsoft has been talking about natural user interaction for a couple years now already, right? But the thing that we keep realizing is that what's natural for me might not be natural for you at all. Everyone considers these type of activities different. So that's another consideration that you guys should put in your list when designing your experiences. Consider that what we might be like shooting a rifle or a pistol might be something completely different. Same thing for throwing a ball or kicking a ball, whatever experience you're trying to do. People will think about the gesture differently. You might be able to provide some visual aids or some demo of how to perform the gesture, but that is part of the challenge of designing for Kinect. In the next video, for instance, we're asking people to do the same gesture, the swipe gesture, and notice how everyone will do it differently. This is the first lady doing a gesture, completely different with the other hand. He was sitting down. This is his own personal style. This girl as well, a completely different way. And this lady, very, very precise, right? So what the Xbox team learned again is that let's go. It's not even shooting a pistol or a rifle or kicking a ball. This is just swipe, which could sound very simple. But six people doing it completely different. So again, that's one more consideration when it comes to creating experiences for Kinect. There's all these variables and all these human body understanding that we have to successfully create experiences that are enjoyable for people. And prototyping again, like I mentioned, Ali keeps insisting on this. Build actual prototypes, test them with people, define some benchmarks in terms of success, time, and other achievements, and that will help you refine those gestures. Things might not get there initially. And the one concept that Ali has also shared is that right now, Kinect is on early stages, and the world as a whole is on early stages when it comes to air gestures. So doing air gestures for people is still something new. We think that little by little, right, people will start learning more about that and will feel more comfortable with that. And little by little, there will be a defined, predefined like gesture language for obvious things. Right now, there are not a lot of conventions, and that's why it's such a fun time for developers to start being a part of this, because there are no conventions. Right now, you guys, if you jump into this, you're literally being pioneers in the space. So that's Ali's Twitter alias. He just started blogging a couple of weeks ago. He already has two really good blog posts on designing Kinect. He asked me to tell you that you can send him really tough questions via Twitter, and you can contact him if you are creating an experience and you want his advice in terms of interaction, ping him, and he's going to be giving us a hand. So today we saw a lot of things, right? Just a quick recap. We talked about Microsoft Design, how we think of applications no longer as isolated entities of their own, but as unified experiences across multiple screens that can react much better to the expectations of people. Then we talked about Metro in Windows Phone. We learn more about where Metro comes from, the principles, fears reduction of elements, and how that gave life to the Metro design language as well. And we also explored a little bit of Kinect. It was really just a quick pass. If you want more information on Kinect, contact Ali or visit the Kinect SDK website in Microsoft Research. They have a full day of sessions and videos there that you can use. And thank you very much. I think we're going to have some words from Catherine and David. So thank you very much, and enjoy the day. Again, great speakers on the web track, on the UX track, and let us know what you think throughout the day. Thank you very much.